And thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show and the Wednesday edition with Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Susie. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. It's always really nice when it's sunny out when we get here at 7 in the morning. So
yeah, we've got some great weather in store, I know, and a lot of other things. And we have in the studio with us today, we have a great show. We have in the studio with us Steve Youngdahl. He's the chair of the Lake Pendere School District Board of Trustees, as well as Superintendent Sean Woodward. Steve and Sean, say hello.
Good morning.
Sean, yeah?
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having us. I really appreciate it.
And we're going to be talking about schools are the topic. We want to talk about how the school year went. We have a big topic on the agenda as well about the plant facility levy that was recently approved and that voters will be deciding in August. And there's some other great things going on with the school, so we're going to have a good discussion.
This will be great. And I know one thing that's happening right now is all the teachers are taking a big sigh in and letting it out here in a few weeks. So I know that feeling when the end of the school year comes is pretty. And I always wonder how the administration feels. So we'll get into some of that. But really, the details behind our amazing school district here and the levy. Before we do that, though, the weather from the National Weather Service, currently it's 52 degrees out. We're going to have a high today of 78, partly sunny. And tonight, mostly cloudy, 52. And tomorrow, 20% chance of thunderstorms, high 71. And tomorrow night, Thursday night, low 49. And then it's going to get really hot on the weekend.
Yeah, we're going to have a weekend up in the 80s. So it's going to be like a summertime weekend. Some of the other things going on outside, the lake level has risen to just about 2,060 feet. It's up 0.65 feet in the past week. It's on its way to the full pool level at 2,062. So the lake has risen quite a bit. The sunrise was at 4:49 this morning. The sun sets tonight at 8:39 p.m. In the past 7 days, we've picked up 13 more minutes of sunlight each day. I hate to say it, but we only got about 3 weeks of that left because then we hit the summer solstice and the days start getting shorter. So, but it's going to be a great summer. We always have a beautiful summer here.
It's getting light so early. I always think, well, this is what it will be like in July, too.
Yeah, so yeah, it will be like
here
this.
Here we are.
And the stream flows are coming down now. The Priest River is at 3520 CFS, or cubic feet per second. It's come down 850 CFS over the last week. The Moye River is at 1350 CFS. It's come down a little over 100, actually it's come down about 800 CFS in the last week. So the rivers are dropping fast now as our spring snowpack is coming off. It's mostly off now. And what else is going on around town, Susie?
Well, I know there's a lot of things going on around town, but I just heard some really interesting news this morning in the email. One of the bands that's going to be playing at the KRFY membership drive, that's on the 10th, Friday the 10th, is the RFB band. And they've asked if they could do a recording and have their new CD be called Live at the Crosby Building is where we'll be broadcasting for 2 days.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so we're going to be basically cutting a record at our membership event. And the Crosby Building, if people aren't familiar with that term, it's where Snowy River was at until just recently. It's at the corner of Cedar and First Avenue, right next to the Cedar Street Bridge.
Did you know that it used to be the JCPenney's building? And before that, it was, I've heard tell, the Safeway building.
Yes, and actually, I visited that Safeway building.
So you've been around a while.
Yeah. Hate to date myself like that, but you know, you get a little bit of history in the town. You do see the way things change and the buildings take on new life. Also going on this weekend is Timberfest is coming back. Timberfest was a big event that happened here for many years. It's a bunch of skill testing events in the logging trades, including cross-cut sawing, axe throwing, power saw competitions. It's actually, these guys are real athletes. And you realize that when you see them practicing the skills that they actually use out when they're out logging. Timberfest was a big deal here for many years, and then it went quiet for actually 15 years. It's been 15 years since we had a Timberfest event here, and they decided to bring it back this year. It's at the Bonner County Fairgrounds from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, so that would be if you haven't never been to a Timberfest style or a logging event style event, this is one to check out.
And they're even going to have Jell-O wrestling. I'm not sure what that is, but that's what they're having.
And that's probably not a traditional logging skill.
Like out in the woods, they're not wrestling in Jell-O. Okay.
I don't think so. Yeah. And there is a lot more going on in town, as always. If we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about some more of the events happening in town. If not, you can always check our calendar at krfy.org. And, of course, calendar is provided by sandpointonline.com. So be informed, see what's going on in the community. And with that, let's introduce our guests again. We have with us Steve Youngdahl and Sean Woodward with the Lake Pendre School District. Thank you again for coming in, Steve and Sean. You know, we have a lot to talk about, more than we can cover in an hour here on the morning show. But I thought we're coming up on the end of school. School's out at the end of next week, I believe.
Yes.
We have a couple of three graduations coming up. Why don't you give us the thumbnail view of how the school year went? Sean.
Yeah, you bet. It was a fantastic year. It's a time of year that it's like, wow, what just happened? You know, everything's kind of building. The kids are excited. The staff's excited. And we have these graduations coming up. And I should say that the Sandpoint High School graduation is on January 10th, Friday night at Memorial Field.
June 10th.
I'm sorry. June 10th, Clark Fork.
We won't make them wait that long.
Exactly. Clark Fork is on June 9th, and Lake Pendre Alternative School is on June 8th. It's been a fantastic year. Right now, we're just taking stock and reviewing our improvement plans for the past year, and taking a look at where did we meet our targets, where might we need to adjust for next year, and the planning never ends. The main thing that we're most proud about this year is the fact that while we're continuing to be one of the highest achieving school districts in the state of Idaho, we're flexing what we're doing to better reflect the needs of our particular community. And three quick areas that I wanted to share a little bit about was we know that we need to be flexible and responsive to people because we're not the only game in town when it comes to education. And we have three relatively new programs. We have an experiential learning program out at Clark Fork High School that just completed its first year. We have a STEAM program out at Southside Elementary School. And by the way, I should say that Southside received a National Distinguished Award for Title Schools. And that basically means it's a federally funded program. They received $50,000 from the federal government because they have such small achievement gaps between students in poverty and students not in poverty. There's typically a very large gap. There's about a 4% gap that is outstanding for that particular population. We have an experiential learning program that's finishing its second year at Farm and Stidwell Elementary. And then I think Chair Youngdahl is going to speak a little bit about a homeschool academy we're opening next year. I share those things because while we're pleased with our academic progress in our more traditional settings, we're going to continue to do those things, but we also want to offer other programs because we know that learners come in all shapes and sizes and we need to be responsive to that. So
it sounds like you're getting a real pulse on progress and having goals for the progress and knowing it's not a quick fix are laying out all kinds of new programs and ideas and to meet the needs of that diverse population of learners.
So let's talk about the homeschool academy a little bit. Do we have a larger number of homeschoolers here in Bonner County than is typical? Can you judge that?
Well, actually, since we used to homeschool, our first two when they're in elementary school age, I can tell you that there's a very sizable homeschool community here. And I've been on the board a little over 10 years now, and when I first came on, I started that discussion about servicing the needs of homeschoolers. And it's been a long road. And until Sean came on board, we were really we're not able to bridge that trust gap with the homeschool community. And he has done that. He's convinced them of our overarching philosophy that we're customer service oriented, and we need, you know, we want to service their needs as well as the other children in the in our school district. And so next year, and this is a historic event for our district, I believe, maybe for the state even, and that is we're going to have our first homeschool academy addressing the needs and the wants of the homeschool group. So I'm very excited about this. It's just one more aspect. I think it's solid evidence that we are customer service oriented, and you know, this is a big event for us.
So what does the Homeschool Academy consist of? What's the program?
Okay, so firstly, it's going to the curriculum is going to be driven by the customers. In other words, we're very flexible. We've thrown out, I think the superintendent came up with 5 broad categories just to show that we're very flexible on how would you like to. I mean, I have my own personal favorites, but I'm not the one that's
going
to
be bringing
the kids in. Yeah.
Right.
So that process, the superintendent's going through that process with the parents who have already, you know, come in to say, you know what, we like what you're saying. We want to do this. And so the curriculum will be guided by demand.
So basically what I've done has interviewed all the families that have come in and met the children and said, look, here's what we can do. Where are we missing the target for your family? And so it's been a pretty fluid process where basically they're saying, okay, here's what I cannot feel. I'm not real comfortable doing at my house with my children. And so it might be reading, it might be writing, it might be field-based study, experiential learning, it might be robotics. I mean, the sky's the limit. And the caveat is we just have to ensure that we are following our state standards and building a program that way. It's funded by the state just like any of our other students would be. And at the end of the day, it'll look very different than a traditional school where we might have some families just coming in Friday afternoons for a half a day, and the parents are saying, yeah, they're tired of me by the end of the week. How about Friday afternoons? And the answer is, of course, we can do that. So right now we have about 14 students signed up. I think it's going to grow exponentially once we prove that it's a support for them. And the first question they ask is, you're not trying to do this to convince us to come into your schools, are you? It's like, no. We're doing this to support you all, and if at the end of the day, if it means that you might end up in one of our schools, great. If not, that's okay too. We just want to be flexible and responsive, and it's been taken a while for people to get over that. They're trying to figure out, well, what's in it for you all, and well, what's in it for us is we're public education. Mm-hmm. We exist to help educate the children of this community. And there's a whole segment that we've missed out on over the years. Idaho is very different than most states. Most states, you have to declare to homeschool legally. So you are able to find those families because you know who in your district is homeschooling. Idaho, that's not the case. So we don't know. But what I'm finding is there's a lot more than I realized for sure. Mm-hmm. And they're coming out of the woodwork to want to start the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. And of course, this broadcast is even an invitation if you homeschoolers or homeschooling parents are listening to this to get in touch with you, so because the school district can offer some support to them.
Yeah, we would actually love it, and you know, work all summer, and anytime I'll meet with the families. We're going to hire the teachers in June. It's not a co-op type of a program where parents are required to come in and teach. We'll have fully certified teachers that will be working with the students and with 2 very different backgrounds. For example, at the elementary level, we're looking for a Spanish certified teacher, you know, highly specialized, that also has a background in early literacy. And we'll also have somebody that is more well-versed working with older students. So
mm-hmm. So it's an actual academy and they have their own site.
Yeah, so we haven't landed on our site yet. It will be off campus. We're looking to lease a space somewhere. There's a lot of available spaces. It will be, our goal is by the end of the school year, it'll be self-funded, if you will. So what we'll do is we receive funding from the state per student, and we pretty confident that it'll cover all of our overhead by the end of the first year.
What's the idea behind keeping it off-site from the school? Is that to just provide a little separation?
Yeah, I mean, many of the families that I've been working with really are more interested if they have their own place.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a little bit of, I don't know if I would say fear, but a little bit of hesitance to be associated or attached to a school for some of our homeschool families.
Okay, I'm going to put a finer point on that, Chris, you know, having homeschooled. And that is that when, especially in the elementary ages, really, you want to control the social aspects of your children. That's just, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just playing it black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the hesitancies in having this program and having people want to come in is that aspect of it. So, you know, that was the superintendent met with these folks. He heard what their concerns are, and he addressed the concerns with a solution, which is we're going to have an off-site campus. And that way, you know, that concern is covered. Mm-hmm. You're still going to be able to control all the social aspects that you have up to this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. You mentioned the experiential learning program, and we've talked about it in past shows, but for folks that haven't caught that or are not familiar with that, tell us a little bit more about what that is. And again, it's at Clark Fork High School, and also they have a program at Farm and Stidwell, right?
You bet. So basically, it's all about learning by doing and really moving away from the more traditional approach into let's get students applying what they're learning in meaningful, real-world ways. Not that we don't do that in many of our classrooms district-wide, but the inherent expectation of an experiential program is students will learn by doing. And so we have about right now 60, actually more like 55 students at Farm and Stidwell, grades 1 through 6 in a program for 2 classrooms. We have a waiting list of about 150 families to get on board. That's a multi-age setting, a non-graded setting. So that what that means is it's more of a mastery-based situation where you could be a first grade student who is working pretty seamlessly at the fifth grade level, if you will, and vice versa. You could have a fourth grade student that might struggle in mathematics that can easily work at the first or second grade level without the typical stigmas that may be attached with getting pulled out of a classroom. We've set it up in such a way that at Farm and Stidwell, where the teachers have what they need from an instructional standpoint, material standpoint, to meet the needs of all their learners. So that's Farm and Stidwell. Out at Clark Fork High School, junior, senior high school, we actually were really struggling with attendance out there. We were dipping below 100 students, and the staff rallied around this idea of, well, how can we market ourselves in such a way to best meet the needs of the students while at the same time solve an issue that we're having with declining enrollment in rural schools? Their enrollment increased by about 18% this year based on the fact that they have a far different product that they're offering. And it's basically what it is that we have a traditional high school out there. For 22 or 23 of the days, we're doing classrooms without walls. And so there's 3 different tracks out there that students can sign up for: outdoor education, fine arts, and technology. And with technology, they're doing a lot of manufacturing. They're doing some robotics and things like that. So basically, students are saying, okay, I'm really interested in outdoor education. I would like to go to the backside of Schweitzer and test water out on Colburn Lake, for instance. I'm going to sign up for this, and I'm going to learn reading, writing, listening, speaking, math in the context of a real community issue, if you will. So we're ending year one in that particular program. And then finally, Southside Elementary, they're a little worried about their enrollment as well. So again, getting together and saying, well, what can we offer that might be different that people might want to come in for? And they're doing STEAM education 1 day a week, hands-on project-based learning as well.
What is STEAM education?
I'm so sorry. Acronyms in education are terrible, I know. So science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics. And it's really more of an applied kind of learning versus the more traditional. I do want to say a lot of our efforts are spent on new programs, but at the same time, some of those that kind of learning doesn't necessarily work for everybody, and we're very pleased and proud of what's going on in all of our other classrooms as well. Again, mm-hmm. we're just trying to add more options.
Mm-hmm. So. One question I have, so often this is different for the teachers, the two teachers at Farman and out at Clark Fork. And so how are they feeling about these new programs, these experiential learning programs?
You know, I mean, on one hand, they love it because you're given more autonomy. And you get to be maybe more creative than they've been, it felt like, and more permission to try different things than they've been able to in the past, perhaps. But at the same time, they're realizing that there's a much higher degree of interest. And with starting something new, it's very stressful, and it's very difficult to the planning and the preparation that goes into it. So while at the beginning, it's like, oh, yeah, we got this. It's very different. Once you kind of start hitting the middle to the end of the school year, it's like, oh my goodness, this is tough. So it's come with, it's been very exciting on one hand. On the other hand, they're finding that, okay, it's a good thing school is out in June. You can kind of recharge over the summer, spend some planning time getting ready for September.
Do they get extra support in this project, these projects?
They do. So we give them additional planning days during the summer, and that, which they greatly appreciate because they're doing it anyhow. So for us to be able to compensate them and pay for some days in the summer is great. You know, it's the old adage, building the plane while it's flying. I mean, we're literally doing that all year in these programs and trying different things and developing different metrics that can let us know, are we on track? Are we off track? Give you a quick example for our experiential learning program out at Farman. We did a pretty extensive parent survey. What's worked for you and your child, and student survey? What's worked? What would you like to see changed? And at the end of the day, if you ask the question, what would you like to see changed? People are going to answer that. And sometimes it's like you receive it and you go, oh my gosh, they want us to do some different things. And it's like, yeah, we asked them that question. And so what we're excited about is now spending time this summer for all of our programs. All right, tweaking it to meet the needs of our stakeholders and then articulating we're going to do things different based on what you've told us. And so we're right in the middle of that continuous improvement process right now.
So, at Southside, you mentioned that they're recently received an award. This was sounds like a national grant that the school received because the gap between the poverty level students and the more affluent students, the educational gap is small. Can you elaborate on this a little bit?
You bet. I mean, so if you look at socioeconomics and demographics, there's an absolute opportunity gap between how students of poverty perform versus students that aren't in a poverty situation. And you there's always outliers, though, which is beautiful. So Southside happens to be an outlier where, irregardless of the demographics, students are achieving at very close levels. And so they didn't apply for a grant. They just they crunched the numbers at the federal level and said, whoa, what's happening out there? The achievement gap doesn't seem to exist. It does very little. So it's one of those deals where usually you apply for dollars to support what you're doing. You know, get a knock on the door out at Southside and said, we'd like to give you $50,000 because you are doing such great work. The catch is you need to tell us what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so we're studying up on that as a school district to do, because if there's outliers and we want our district to be an outlier, the entire school district. Mm-hmm. And in some cases we are.
How did Southside achieve this, closing up that achievement gap?
What one of the things that they do very well is they really work with instructional groupings. So rather than, okay, I've got this whole class and I'm going to teach to the whole class, which is a pretty outdated model, it's I'm going to find out where are my students in my classroom. And I'm going to do some whole class instruction, but I'm also going to do an awful lot of flexible grouping. Not ability-based old school grouping where, you know, I might have been in the Robin group. My brothers were always in the Eagle group, by the way. I might have been in the Crow group. I'm not sure. But where you...
Hey, crows are nice.
That's right. It's a very different system where based on a particular unit of study, students might be very high achieving in one unit and might have a little less experience in another where it's very flexible. And so you are basing your instruction on what the students really need instead of more of a whole group. So we've identified that as one of the practices that we know works for students.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners, this is the 88.5 KRFY morning show, and we're in here this morning with Steve Youngdahl and Sean Woodward from the Lake Pend Oreille School District. And one of the big topics we want to talk about today is the plant facility levy. But before we get on that, you know, we're kind of talking about things that have gone on this past school year. Are there any other things that you'd like to bring up, Steve or Sean, about other programs, new things that are going on with the schools?
You bet. One other thing that we're really excited about is there's a lot of controversy around new standards in Idaho. And I've been on the show before and I've said, well, politics aside, I'm really happy that we're raising the bar and the expectations for students in Idaho. So that's great. So one of the things that we've had to do, though, is adjust our system to better reflect the demands that we're having at every grade level. We spent a year researching instructional materials in the area of mathematics. We landed on a program for next year, a new set of instructional materials that we're really excited about that better reflect what we want our students to be able to do. And that the biggest part is we want students to, yes, be mathematically fluent. We want them to have really good conceptual understanding. Equally important, we want them to be able to utilize those skills in the application of real-world problems. And so our new curriculum that we'll have next year will really reflect that need. So,
well, we want to take a little musical break and then come back and talk about the process for coming up with a levy. How do we go from need to process for asking for money? And we'll get to that in a moment. But we're going to hear the Beach Boys. This is Be True to Your School. We'll be right back. And that was the Beach Boys, Be True to Your School. And that's an appropriate song right now because we have in the studios of the KRFY Morning Show. Oops. Hang on. Oops. Sometimes you have to remember to turn off the next song. This is 88.5 KRFY. We're back in the studios with Steve Youngdahl and Sean Woodward from the Lake Pend Oreille School District. We're talking about a lot of different things. We're really excited about the end of the school, for sure, but we have a lot of work coming up. We have a levy process, and that's, Chris, you want to?
Yes. So let's talk about the school levy. We've talked about a lot of other programs that are going on. A lot of the progress was made this year with different programs. But we have a big decision coming before the voters here. And the vote is going to be August 30 on a plant facility levy. And this is a $55.1 million proposal that's going to basically replace three of our schools and add a significant addition to the Clark Fork School. And it's going to have projects that are going to affect almost every school in the district. And I guess let's start off with, you know, what is the need here? This is a large, you know, sweeping in and taking care of, as I understand, accrued deficiencies that have come up over the years with our school facilities.
Correct. And we can talk extensively about that process. I'm going to try to keep it as brief as I can. Over the course of the last 10 years of my being on the board, I can tell you that the one of the things that the board has the hardest time grappling with is going to the community and asking for money. We're very sensitive to that. Maybe through that abundance of caution, we, in retrospect, we should have been here sooner. The process that we just went through brought to light some major deficiencies in a lot of our schools, and and we had professionals come in and do the evaluations. We had a, and Sean can talk to you about the process that we went through once the board decided that we wanted to look into this. But I can tell you that I had a little sticker shock when the committee came back and said, here's what the needs are. And believe me when I tell you, if it was just a perfunctory question of what are the, you know, are we at the end of our of the useful life of the buildings and we need to rebuild them, then we move forward. But we took several months of really going over these details, struggling with the question. And it finally became evident that it will just to be a more expensive proposition the longer we put it off. We'll be putting good money into bad projects. I mean, if you were going to go to our website and take a look at some of the pictures of the plumbing that we have in underneath some of these buildings and the way it's rotting away, it's we weren't negligent. We were just trying to be as frugal as we possibly could. And now it's gotten to the point where we just have to do something.
And some of these buildings are quite aged anyways. Everything has a life
expectancy. The ones that we're rebuilding, right? Yeah. The ones that we were, you know, are at the end of their service life. They were built in the 50s. A lot of them are on slabs with the plumbing underneath them. And I really choose to be done jackhammering up floors to replace pipes that have rusted out and have holes in them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a good use of our taxpayer funds to be doing that. But there's several different facets of this process. One of them is just are you at the end of the lifespan of that building to where now you're going to put good money into a bad project? So that's one of the big questions. That's easily addressed by having professionals come in and survey everything. The other one is from an educational standpoint, of which I can have the superintendent talk about more. And we came up against that hard question in one of the proposed buildings that we wanted to replace. But all of a sudden, we had a choice. And different locations meant you're going to have a different educational opportunities. You're going to have a different philosophy on the building. We never had that opportunity to have a choice like that before. And it's a question that's going to take a couple of years to get through. So we took that building off of the schedule and said, we'll do this next time. We have to do a thorough, because look, these are 50 years. The answer is 50 years. So whatever decision we make, we're living with that for the next 50 years. So we want to make sure we make the right moves and for the right reasons. And it's time. We're going to put the question. You know, we finally came to the realization that the need's definitely there, and it's time to put the question out to the voters.
And I'm going to rattle off the work that would be covered in this plant facility levy, and then I'd like to come back and we can dig in a little bit on each one of the major projects, at least. So this is a $55.1 million plant facility levy. And it would pay for rebuilding entirely the Sandpoint Middle School. The middle school would actually be moved. Rebuild the Northside Elementary School. Rebuild the majority of the Washington Elementary School. Rebuild the Career Technical Shop at Clark Fork Junior Senior High School. It would replace portables at Sandpoint High School with four new classrooms. It would reconfigure, rebuild the athletic fields and track at Sandpoint High School. And basically, there would be a list of smaller improvements at all the Lake Pendre School District schools. You addressed the process, Steve. Now, part of the process was you had a third-party committee, if you will, that looked this over. It wasn't just the school board.
Right.
So what we did, facilities committee.
Yeah, so what we did is we tasked the superintendent to come up with a committee and to research each campus. I mean, district wide, they threw a pretty big net, and I'll have him speak to the actual process that he went through. But our opinion is it was very thorough, and we had a very, very clear picture of the current condition of our buildings, what the needs are, both from a physical standpoint and from an educational standpoint.
So do you want to follow up on that, Sean?
You bet. Yeah. So what we felt like we really needed to do as well was get somebody from the outside to objectively give us feedback on the state of our building. So we actually hired a consultant last August. And we're willing to spend the money to do that because we wanted people to fully understand that we were vetting this through some people that were more, you know, experts in the field. So we hired a consultant and put together a facility study committee with a pretty broad-based group of community members. This consultant started working with us immediately and started with interviewing school staff, taking architects through our buildings and looking at doing a physical assessment and a functional assessment of the buildings. We spent a lot of time on our enrollment projections and took a look at our enrollment based on four different kind of cohort models. And then we looked at a capacity analysis of each of our buildings. So we collected an awful lot of data. And then what happened was we sat down with this committee and tried to make sense of the information that was in front of us. All the buildings, you can find this online at our lpoSD.org. You can find the results of that, the study. All of the buildings were assessed either poor or unsatisfactory, poor, good, or excellent, based on a rubric that the consultants use. Only one of our schools scored from a physical standpoint as good, and the majority were unsatisfactory or poor. So basically, we took a look at all the data and were tasked with making a proposal to our school board. We spent about 4 months developing a proposal. In January, we put what you see today in front of the board, and ultimately, through many public meetings, they adopted our recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's go ahead and run through some of these different projects. In town, probably the most noticeable project will be rebuilding the Sandpoint Middle School. What's involved with that?
So if you've ever been on Division Avenue in the morning, I've only been rear-ended once, almost twice, but it's a traffic mess. We've got about 42 acres on our Division and Pine Street property, and we really wanted to maximize the use of that space a little bit better. So the committee is recommending that the new middle school would go, and the middle school was built in 1954, and the last additions were 1972 to that particular building. It was rated unsatisfactory, and the recommendation from the consultant on an unsatisfactory rating is to either replace 80% of the school or tear it down and start over. And from an economic standpoint, it's more feasible, more cost-effective to build new. We would put that school off of Pine Street so it would have more of a separate feel from the campus of Sandpoint High School.
But in the location where the ball fields are right now along Pine Street.
Thank you, yes. Exactly. Where the Pine Street fields are, those fields would be moved so they'd be in between Sandpoint High School and the new Sandpoint Middle School. That school would be built bigger than it is now because we are experiencing a little bit of an uptick in enrollment for many different reasons at Sandpoint Middle School. And we also are very confident that that will continue when we have a new school. The piece that I should also add is that it includes adding an auxiliary gym. Can't tell you how often, especially during basketball season, that I'm called and community members say, why do I have to pick my child up from their practice at 9:30 at night at Kootenai Elementary School? And the answer is, well, that's... we have limited gym space. So this particular building would include a regular gym as well as an auxiliary gym as well. So that's the Sandpoint Middle School.
Okay. How about Washington Elementary, which is located, again, and right in the kind of the downtown district?
You bet. Washington, I do have to share a quick little story. In my second year here, I got a phone call from our facilities guys saying, look, we do not have heat. We're in the dead of winter, and we need to fix it. And you need to tell us if we should have school in session or we need to cancel school tomorrow, just for Washington Elementary. And we made a decision to have the guys work all night and have school in session because it's really tough on families and kids from a safety standpoint to close school on one elementary. Long story short, they had to jackhammer into the floors, get to the pipes to fix the issue. And to this day, I'm not sure if we made the right decision or not as to whether or not to have school. Some of the parents said, "You guys are crazy to have school." We were jackhammering still in the morning at the school, and my kids had dust on their jackets. Yeah. At that point, I started thinking, oh, my goodness, we will have to start shutting our schools down to fix the problems that we're having. So with that said, Washington Elementary would be, most of it would be replaced. There was an annex that was built in 1994 that has four classrooms that would remain. With that particular project, we cannot really economically or safely build the new school while the students are in session. So the plan there would be to phase it in after Sandpoint Middle School's built. The Washington Elementary students for either a half a year or a full year would be moved to Sandpoint Middle School.
The old Sandpoint Middle School.
The old Sandpoint Middle School. Thanks, Chris. Had we tried to do it while school is in session, would have cost us about $500,000 more to do that. And so the answer is pretty obvious to us to do that in phases. So, yeah, that's Washington.
Does Washington School, is it enlarged? Are there new facilities there?
Actually, it would actually remain about the same size outside of, we would probably add another kindergarten classroom to allow us to do full-day kindergarten out there, which we haven't been able to because of the space constraints up until now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other large rebuilding project is at Northside Elementary.
Yes, and Northside, again, was built in 1953, and we added some classrooms in 1963 and 1980. We would rebuild Northside while school is in session. We have a big enough footprint to do that safely, and I've been in a school district, a principal of a school that was able to do that, and it's one of the neatest learning experiences for students to watch their new elementary school being built. That school would be built for, we have about 150 students there right now. We would build that for about 180 students to 190 students. That will help us with an issue we have at Kootenai Elementary School, which is overcrowded, and we would have to adjust our boundaries a bit to have some more students go to Northside that are currently at Kootenai. But that expected completion date on that particular building would be 2017, so relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then at Clark Fork Junior Senior High, the project there is to rebuild the career technical shop.
Exactly. So right now it's woefully inadequate, the shop that they have, for the needs of the program that they're running. It's just not a safe situation, I would say, out there currently. And we would be building a new career technical shop that would be attached to the school instead of an outbuilding. For safety and security reasons, we try to have a single point of entry at every one of our schools that would allow us to do that at Clark Fork as well. And if I can really quick circle back to Sandpoint High School, we would be redoing all of our fields, redoing the track. Sandpoint High School currently has many portables on the campus, as well as an outbuilding that's an art building. We'd actually be adding four classrooms to Sandpoint High School on the south end. Again, that would allow us to have better facilities, A and B, to allow us to have a single point of entry in that school as well. Right now, we have students all over that 42-acre campus. It's not the most efficient way to serve students or the safest way.
Mm-hmm. And with moving the middle school over to Pine Street, where the existing middle school is, it's kind of hard to paint this picture maybe by words, but the track fields will separate, track and ball fields will separate the two schools.
Exactly.
Is there an educational benefit from that to keep the middle schoolers at a little more distance from the high school?
You know, it depends on who you ask. From my standpoint, not necessarily, but there's a lot of families that feel like, you know, I want my children to have a little distance, if I have a middle school child, from those high school students. Mm-hmm. And we hear that over and over, and they like that separation. They're still close enough because it's a small enough plot of land that students who, from the middle school, go to our high school for certain classes, they'll still be able to do that.
They'll be able to walk over pretty easily.
Exactly. Yeah. Nice walkway.
And of course, the two schools will share the ball fields that are now separating them.
Exactly. And what it'll do for us, it'll be a really efficient use of that space as far as we'll have more of an athletic complex feel, if you will, versus being spread all out. But we figure that's the very best way we can efficiently use those 42 acres.
Quick question. Will the exit from the high school parking lot still be right there by the highway and Division Street?
Yes. There mm-hmm. will actually be a separate entrance, though, for buses.
Okay.
So there'll be one.
That will help a lot.
Yeah. Right now, it's a mess, but there'd be a separate bus drop-off off of Division, and then a separate an entryway and a separate student and parent entryway as well where it sits currently. And then, of course, on the all the traffic that goes to Sandpoint Middle School now would be coming off of Pine Street for parents' drop-off.
It's an impressive amount of work ahead. And the first part of that work is to get the levy passed. And I'm sure that you are going to set up all kinds of ways for people to get their questions answered. And a couple questions I just came up with when I was thinking about this is $55.1 million enough to complete all of these projects? Is it sufficient?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Okay. So we've spent a large amount of time analyzing that with our with architects, with experts, et cetera. And yes, we mm-hmm. will complete all of those projects.
Let me put a finer point on that. Back in the late 80s, there was a plant facilities levy, and they ran out of money. The Kootenai School was not completed. Sandpoint High got cut down to one story. And that's what happens when you cut it too, you know, so tight that you can't finish a project, which I think is negligent. So what we've done is we've budgeted for the buildings that we want, and we know we're going to have some that's left over, which we have the list actually is longer than what that money will provide for, but we're going to put them in order of priority. So it depends on how much of that is left. We'll get some of these other projects done. And I would rather do that than go down in history as the board that fell short and had to cut back on a project because we didn't plan properly.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem that it popped up almost immediately with Sandpoint High School, as I understand it. The portables came on very soon after that brand new school was built.
Yes, and that just does not do well with people. And that's one of the other reasons why we'd build Sandpoint Middle School bigger. One issue that I get asked over and over is, do you really need to do this, right? And the answer is, yes, we really do. And one thing that we've enjoyed in our community for many, many, many years is one of the lowest levy or tax rates in the state of Idaho. We have benefited from that as a community. But that comes at a cost as well. We're behind now. So with that said, our tax rate, our levy rate, including our regular supplemental levy that we run every 2 years and a plant facility levy combined, will put us a bit above the state average now. And we're playing catch up. But the thing that is amazing to me, we'll be asking for $55 million. There's a lot of projects that will get done. We're still going to be just a bit above the state average right now, and that's because we enjoy such a broad tax base, one of the broadest and most favorable for a school district in the state of Idaho. Mm-hmm. So the answer is yes. The problem is this: as things start failing, and they do and they will, we have limited resources, and what's going to happen is the board has been really responsible over the years. We have a really healthy reserve of around 10%, which is 10 to 11%, which is unusual for the state of Idaho or anywhere in the nation, but that will be gone quickly. And then what happens is it starts impacting what we can do in the classroom for students day in and day out. We do not have a limitless supply here, and we're at a critical point here where we could be in a lot of trouble if we don't put some attention into our facilities.
Let's talk about the tax impact a little bit, because I'm sure that's going to be a primary concern to folks that are going to be deciding how to vote on the levy. And you mentioned, Sean, that this, let's say you have a home that's assessed at $200,000. If you are live in your home and you enjoy the Idaho homeowners exemption, your taxable value on that is $100,000. Now, you mentioned that the state average school tax rate usually comes to $357 annually. Our tax rate currently is $184. So we've been currently at about half of the state average with the projected the new plant facility levy added in there, the tax rate will go to $384 on, is that correct?
Yeah. So it will come to $384. And so it would add an additional $200 per year on a home that's valued at $200,000. So again, it'll put us just above the state average of $357. We would be at $384 and get an awful lot of needed work done.
And this sunsets as well, right? It's a six-year deal?
It's a six-year. Most school districts in Idaho run a supplemental levy in a plant facility or bond together. That's the norm. So basically, they're usually passing replacement levies. Again, we've just gone years without having anything like this. We've only run three successfully in the history of our school district, in the 50s, in the 80s, and then around 2008. Most districts have building capital improvements on the books at all times. Mm-hmm. We're the outlier there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A real quick question. Are there other sources for revenue? Say the the levy either passes or it doesn't. You've set the mark of how much you need. Are there other sources of revenue? This is it. This community pays for these schools. It's our children.
I'll put a finer point on that one for you. It's one of my pet peeves. Mm-hmm. Our district back when we were the West Bonner County and Lake Pend Oreille were combined as one district, we actually sued the state over that particular issue because we felt that they had a constitutional obligation to fund schools. Part of that was funding the building of buildings and the maintenance of buildings. We went all the way to the Idaho Supreme Court, and then we made legal history because we won, but then we got no relief. So the Idaho Supreme Court says, you're right. It is the state's responsibility to do this. Go figure it out. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the legislature cheerfully ignored that, and it's on with what we've always been doing, which is they've given us this avenue to fund building and maintenance in the state of Idaho. It's the only one we have. I don't like having to go to our local taxpayers, but that's Boise. We have to deal with what we have, and that's what we have.
So we're going to have to wrap up here in just a minute, but what do you feel like the opponents or skeptics of this is going to probably be their largest complaint about this?
You know, that's a great question. Firstly, I'm going to tell you that anyone who's taken the time to come in and really view the details of the condition of the schools, they pretty much go, you know what, I don't like having to do it, but you know what, we have to do it. The ones that want to stay at a distance and throw rocks, there's no conversation to be had because they don't want to come in and take a look at it for fear that they might have to agree. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have the citizens of the community that take it seriously. They look at the board and they say, can we trust you? And we now, since Vicki Pfeiffer, who was the chairman of the board starting in early 2000s, and with her guidance, we have established a strong, trusting relationship because we've taken a buck and we've given a buck worth of education, and we've performed. We're one of the top performing districts in the state now, and so we've developed that level of trust, and I think that takes us a long ways.
Okay. Well, thank you again. We've been talking with Steve Youngdahl and Sean Woodward with the Lake Pend Oreille School District about schools, as particularly about the plant facility levy. There will be a vote on this on August 30th. And so, folks, you want to get informed about this. There's a ton of information on the Lake Pend Oreille School District's website at lposd.org. You can see schematics for the various school projects and get more details on this. Steve and Sean, we are running out of time, so I just want to say thank you again for coming in.
Yep.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
And congratulations on the end of another wonderful school year. Good job.
Thank you.
It's a big job, and we appreciate the work you're doing. We just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And we're going to go out with Brandi Carlile's song, Keep Your Heart Young. It is her birthday today. Mm-hmm. So happy birthday, Brandi Carlile. And we'll be back next week.
Yes, see you next week. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you.